Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. This week, we welcome back to the podcast Jack Howard, and our subject of discussion, Captain Marvel.
War is a universal language. I know a renegade soldier when I see one. Never occurred to me that one might come from above.
Hi, welcome to this Kermode on Film podcast, where we're joined once again by Jack Howard.
Hello
Jack,
there.
Welcome. You're becoming a regular fixture. You should just move in.
I like it. I like it.
It should be like in like Malcolm and Wise. We should just like have a house that we... Oh, actually, that's an awkward thought, isn't it? Let's not
How do you imagine us, like, when you're listening to this?
I tell you how I imagine it. I imagine that I'm the landlord who has rented out his flat to some noisy student, and every now and then they sit down and they have a cup of coffee, but generally they can run their own lives independent.
And you just trap me into a conversation about film.
Bikes and skateboards, and they're annoying at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I,
Your idea of youth is so skewed now. Yeah. It's so interesting.
And my idea of youth was skewed. I remember really clearly being in, it may have been Cannes, and I interviewed Larry Clark about his film Kids, which I hated. And I said to Larry Clark, the thing is, Larry, you're like 78 years old, right? But you've made this film that's apparently in tune with the youth. What right do you think you have? And he said, well, I know a lot about kids. And I said, how? He went, I used to go skateboarding with my son. And I thought, and that in a nutshell is everything that's wrong with kids.
It's like if people think that Bart Simpson is the idea of what a teenager is like still.
I know. And Harmony Korine, yeah, he's so streetwise. That's why he's called Harmony. Anyway, moving on. This week, we're going to talk about a film which I think we have a slight difference of opinion on, although I think we're both broadly positive, but in different ways. Captain Marvel. I'm going to allow you to start, because I think you love it.
Okay, so first of all, before we start, let's just get this out there. We're going to do full spoilers.
Yes. Oh, so, I saw you on Twitter apologising to somebody for...
I apologise for anybody who I've spoiled things for, because I think we should preempt that every single time. We do full spoilers on this podcast.
We do, absolutely.
So if you haven't seen Captain Marvel, there are other reviews you can listen to, but please come back to this one once you've seen it, and we're going to go into full detail about it. So,
and while we're there... She's a guy, he's a ghost, it's a sledge.
Sorry. But you didn't give away the titles there, so who knows? Right, okay, so Captain Marvel is Marvel's first female-led superhero film, and it follows Carol Danvers, who is trying to figure out who she is and where she comes from. Well, she's Vers at first, and then we cleverly find out that is...
Because
which I thought was quite a nice touch, actually. So she's trying to figure out who she is and where she comes from. That's a sort of general gist of it. Yeah. Set in the 90s, starring Brie Larson, Jude Law, Ben Mendelsohn. I thought it was great. Generally, I watched it for the first time at the screening where there was, they had Air Force pilots there, they had police officers, like all female from different walks of that sort of industry that I know nothing about, but it was cool to see they were invited, and then there was me at the back feeling like I shouldn't be there. Okay.
So let me, before you go any further, let me ask you how much, this is the Bohemian Rhapsody question.
Yeah.
How much of your response to Captain Marvel was the fact that you saw it in a screening with, armed...
Right. I don't think
officers.
So, not at all. Okay. It didn't feel like a similar thing. I was sort of ready to think it was... pretty good. I was ready to think it was all right.
Okay. So you wanted to like it?
Totally. Yeah, but I was expecting to be like, that was pretty good. Okay. But I actually came out thinking it was really, really good.
Okay, so really good as in what kind of level of really good?
So I think it 8 out of 10. That's okay. Sort of really good.
So
I think,
tell me what's right with it.
So I think that Brie Larson is really, really good in it. Jeez. I think that it feels like a throwback 90s Terminator 2-esque action movie. Okay. The thing that I think is really great about it is that it appears like a really simple sort of standard Marvel movie. Okay. But I think that some of the decisions that they've made in production and in the scripting process are smarter than they seem. So I think that when you're introduced, for example, to Jude Law's character at the start, your movie language brain, because you know how films work, you go, he's a bad guy. Straight away, you watch it and you go, I think that Jude Law is going to turn out to be a bad guy because he's a father figure, he's the mentor, and history tells me that they turn out to be not very nice men. So then you introduce to the Skrulls and you're like, okay, Jude Law's a Skrull. Like, he's definitely going to be a secret Skrull.
Yeah, and a secret Skrull.
Yeah.
Is that your joke?
Yeah.
That's very good. I'm amazed that hasn't been made before. Well done, Jack. Well done.
Again, patting me on the head.
Don't buy a sandwich.
So, yeah, you're like, I've called it. I know where this movie's going. He's going to be a Skrull. And then the movie whips the rug from underneath you and goes, no, Skrulls are not bad guys. You've been fighting on the wrong team. And you are right that Jude Law is a bad guy, but you're wrong about how it's going to turn out. So I think it's playing with audience expectations in a really clever way.
Okay.
It knows you know the language of something, and it whips the rug in a way that you're not expecting.
I'll be out of your hair as soon as I track down the Skrulls that are infiltrating your planet.
Skrulls?
Shapeshifters. They can transform to any life form down to the DNA. Oh boy, you guys don't have any clue, do you?
And in other ways, for example, the action scene that I think is the best one in the whole movie, because it's actually in a real environment, where they're on the train and Sam Jackson is following the train, which obviously reminded me of things like Terminator 2 and The French Connection, and actually the opening scene of Skyfall, where like it's like a Russian doll sequence unraveling. And I really liked that because I think that that type of filmmaking is, again, deceptively simple, but actually rare these days to be able to keep that geography and make you be able to follow it, all the different perspectives from different points of view, and make you understand where everybody is
in relation to each other.
In relation to each other. And I just thought it was really well made, like really, really good. My problem is that the third act of the film becomes a bit more typical Marvel, flashy special effects, where have all the real environments gone?
Yeah.
And I don't think that when she becomes full Captain Marvel, I don't get that Superman theme, hair standing up moment, which I feel like I would have liked to. But, and then you're left with that, which is like, oh, that was, the ending was pretty standard Marvel. Whereas I think the first two acts, especially, are really different and really good. Like the Eternal Sunshine sequence, which is really trippy and really well done, was unexpected, and it feels like you're constantly learning things, and it feels like it feels like a throwback to movies that I loved when I was a kid, and it obviously is doing that on purpose. But then the third act becomes a bit more standard Marvel fanfare.
Okay.
But I think the most of it is really excellent and really clever, well executed filmmaking.
Okay. And when we first mentioned this, you said that apparently, and you're more tuned into this than I am, there has been a lot of online trolling of certain Marvel fanboys.
There really has. And it's not even Marvel fanboys. It's just people who have an agenda when they're watching stuff.
Okay.
And it's very uncomfortable for me, but I think it's also something we should talk about, even though me and you do not feel
this way
at all.
Sure.
It's being discussed. So for me, it's been very frustrating to see reviews, read reviews, watch videos of reviews where people spend a good amount of time talking about the star Brie Larson's personal views and her the things that she said and the actions that she's done to do with, you know, sexism and feminism,
all of which is
perfectly fine and valid. But she said
there should be more female film critics.
Yeah,
there should.
Yeah, exactly. And people are spending too long talking about their thoughts and opinions on things that she said before they're talking about a movie, and I find that to be very frustrating and strange.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think generally, as a rule, all those people who hold those kind of opinions, most of whom, you know, in my head anyway, are living in an unpaid for bedroom in their mother's house, tapping away on their keyboards, not getting out, not getting any sunlight, probably, you know, not getting any personal interaction. I think that what I really want to do is I want to give them a copy of Under the Silver Lake, the Steelbook, open a door to a basement, say, go down there, this film's for you. There we are. Yeah. It's all about how you are really Andrew Garfield. That's fine. Shut the door. And they and
they're the sort of people who watch 500 Days of Summer and go, "Summer's a bitch," exactly. And don't look into the nuances of it.
Yeah. Or watch Ruby Sparks and go, "Look at that. It's typical. You make a girl up, she cheats on you."
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. So I think as a thing, I love the fact that Captain Marvel has been as successful as it is. I love the fact that it's done the kind of box office that makes you want to go,
I want to be Olivia Colman at the Oscars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's, that's great. And the fact of the matter is that the world is changing slowly, and it's great that we are getting those kind of role models and those kind of movies. That's brilliant. My problem with it is this. Because of who it's directed by, because it's... Ryan Fleck and Anna Boden, who had done before Half Nelson and Mississippi Grind. I think that what I wanted was more of their indie edge. Now, we should say right at the very beginning, this is a 56-year-old white man complaining that what complaining that what Captain Marvel didn't give me was an indie edge, and that's absolutely fine. And I will refer everyone once again to the conversation I had with Sherry Lansing, in which I explained to Sherry Lansing, who made Titanic, what was wrong with Titanic. And she said, yeah, and the problem with you is you're not a 14-year-old girl. Okay, so I understand that. However, I think I would have liked it to have been a better film as opposed to something that in principle was easier to embrace. So I think I watched Mississippi Grind again because I went back to my review of it and I remembered how much I loved it. And one of the things I talked about in the review of Mississippi Grind was how the environment was really tactile. I mean, you could feel those, boarded up, run down neighborhoods. You could feel the bar that Ben Mendelsohn was leaning on. And so, I mean, obviously Mendelsohn, is in this film and had worked with him before. You can smell that slightly decayed atmosphere through which these two chances are kind of drifting.
We can't lose. We can't lose.
We can't lose.
We can't lose.
We made it. Hey, we made it. I'm not afraid.
We're gonna bet it all.
And also in the case of Half Nelson, Half Nelson is a film which takes some really quite audacious narrative moves. I mean, it's presenting you, people always complain about when characters need to be sympathetic or unsympathetic. I mean, Half Nelson is a movie that really cleverly plays with your sympathies, but actually, interestingly enough, leads into the point you made about Jude Law. And I think that there have been...
And also, actually, with Ben Mendelsohn's character.
With Ben Mendelsohn's, yeah, absolutely.
In Captain Marvel, yeah.
Yeah, because we are doing spoilers. I think that if you look at the superhero movies made by, for example, Taika Waititi, who's kind of the top of the tree here. You look at a Taika Waititi and you go, okay, I can see that is Taika Waititi. Everything about it is quirky and strange and odd, despite the fact that it's actually in this great big multi-million dollar universe.
But can I say that I actually find Thor Ragnarok particularly frustrating?
Oh, do you? Because?
Yeah, because I think that I think it's lovely that you can watch that and go, this is undoubtedly a Taika Waititi film.
Which it is, right?
It absolutely
There's no
is.
Question that
you
that's what it is.
You can see him. You can see the DNA of it.
Yeah.
But for me, I found the filmmaking particularly frustrating.
Okay.
Because it's in a Marvel movie, because it actually reminded me of the Star Wars prequels in the filmmaking only, in terms of the technical aspect, that a lot of the scenes were static camera, very easily covered.
Oh, so you think it wasn't a good superhero movie, but it was a Taika Waititi movie?
I think it feels like a Taika Waititi movie that he... I can tell the difference between the sequences he shot and then the visual effects sequences where the camera moves another Marvel movie. But when he shoots a scene, he shoots it very standard, very just like normal coverage. And I think that in Captain Marvel, same sort of indie directors becoming superhero movie directors, but they know how to move the camera. They know how to tell a story at that sort of level. Whereas I think that Taika Waititi doesn't.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm also aware of the fact that if one demands an indie-spirited superhero movie, you end up with Fantastic, which nobody wants it's that and it's terrible. But for example, in Captain Marvel, how did you feel about the Annette Bening character? Because I thought the scenes with Annette Bening were actually sub Star Trek. in the, you know,
in that room.
Yeah, the famous person wearing the costume. I could almost see the costume designers actually designing the costume. And it, I mean, it took me out of the moment, because what you wanted with those scenes was, you know, it's kind of the genetic heart of the film. You know, that's kind of where...
But instead you're going, oh, there's Annette Bening.
Your commander insists that you're fit to serve.
I am.
You struggle with your emotions, with your past, which fuels them. You are just one victim of the Skrull expansion that has threatened our civilization for centuries. Imposters who silently infiltrate, then take over our planets.
I agree. I do think that I found that the most jarring. I liked her when she was in the real environments.
Yeah.
But I especially found the last sequence with her, when Nirvana is playing, to be... That's where the film starts to teeter into, oh, we're doing standard Marvel stuff.
It's hokey.
It is a little bit, yeah. And I feel like I want to... As soon as we know that Jude Law's the villain, I don't want to see Annette Bening saying the things that Jude Law should be saying. Yes. Do you know what I mean? It feels a little bit like they had to see that through.
Yeah.
But... And that's, to me, where the film starts to become a little bit, like, creaky.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Second issue, and this is something which can't be solved really, because it's in the DNA of the thing itself. Captain Marvel can do anything, right? Captain Marvel, there's a joke earlier on in which she's having a conversation with Sam Jackson, and she's trying to get him to prove that he isn't a Skrull.
Yeah. Okay?
Oh, you want to get personal.
Where were you born?
Huntsville, Alabama, but technically I don't remember that part.
Name of your first pet?
Mr. Snoofers.
Mr. Snoofers.
That's what I said. Did I pass?
Not yet. First job?
Soldier. Straight out of high school. Left the ranks of full bird colonel.
Then?
Spy.
Where?
It was the Cold War. We were everywhere. Belfast, Bucharest, Belgrade, Budapest. I like the bees. I can make them ride.
Now?
Been riding the desk for the past 6 years, trying to figure out where our future enemies are coming from. Never occurred to me they would be coming from above.
Name a detail so bizarre a Skrull could never fabricate it.
A toast is cut diagonally, I can't eat it.
And so it's a kind of kooky conversation in which she's asking him all these
questions.
Which
reminded me of Uncle Buck.
You ask a lot of questions. I'm a kid, it's my job.
Yeah.
That's a very good comparison. It reminded me of you ever pick your feet in Poughkeepsie, because it was one of those boom, boom, you know, you throw absurd questions at somebody and it's how they react. But there's a joke, which is he says, okay, how do I know that you are whatever it is? And she blows a laser blast out of her fist. And he goes, okay, fine, fair enough.
Okay, your turn. Prove you're not a Skrull.
When she becomes Captain Marvel, she becomes the strongest character in the Marvel universe.
Correct.
And actually, as far as I can tell, the strongest character in the entirety of everything ever. She can fly and breathe in outer space. She can hold off attacking warships with one. I mean, this is Superman levels of skills.
Completely.
But also beyond Superman. I mean, it's kind of... So, a number of questions. Firstly, okay, so she can do anything. And secondly, why didn't they call her before?
In the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Avengers Infinity thing. Okay. It's all terrible. We've been told that the worst thing ever is going to happen. You've got... Call Captain Marvel. She can literally do anything.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of stuff I try not to nitpick in my head, because...
Jack, that's not nitpicking. That's like saying... all this time you had a gun in your pocket?
Yeah.
It's like, why?
I think there are other things like that in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as well, that, you know, if they're going to start introducing characters and they can't just have them keep going in chronological order, I suppose. The idea that, like, how Fury got his eye taken out as well. I love that they play with that in the film as well, yeah, by the way. I like that, like, at first you think he lost it in that action sequence and then it's the cat. Yeah. But, you know, in an earlier film, in The Avengers, he says that the last time he trusted somebody, he lost an eye, which obviously could just be a lie. But he also says in The Avengers, we are hopelessly outgunned. This is nothing we were ever prepared for, which is obviously not true because he knew that aliens were real in the 90s. So it's like they're rewriting their own history. But I also think that these films are designed to be seen in the chronological order, in the order that they are released, rather than the order that they are, like...
Yes, but it's not. It's not
supposed to happen.
I mean, yes, but it's not just chronology that's the issue. I mean, that's, for example, the issue. The problem with all the Alien prequels is they've got that technology. Then how come Ripley didn't have it on the Nostromo?
Yeah.
When there's that whole section which is, I can't find the alien, but I've got a thing that looks like a very early Space Invaders machine. Why didn't you have the fly ball thing that they throw into the pyramid that maps the whole pyramid for them? However, the bigger problem is superheroes are defined by their weaknesses. The thing that makes superheroes interesting is the thing they can't do. So Superman is defined by kryptonite. Batman, I mean, arguable whether or not Batman is a superhero, because he isn't, but he is defined by the fact that he has this darkness that he's wrestling with all the time, and actually he's probably as dark as the characters he's fighting against. Spider-Man is outlawed and is considered to be, you know, on the edges of society, and he, you know, his superpowers are as much of a problem as they are a benefit. All the most interesting superhero stories are when when you see the limit of what the superhero can do.
Can I offer a counterpoint to that?
Go ahead.
I don't think that's true.
Okay.
I think that the superheroes are defined by the choices that they make, not the weaknesses. So Spider-Man is a normal kid who can choose to just have a normal life if he wants to and do well in school and have a girlfriend, and that's the thing he clearly desires, but he has a great power, great responsibility, so chooses to be Spider-Man because he's choosing to be a hero. Superman, yeah, he's defined by the fact that his weakness is kryptonite, but he is choosing to make the right, to do the right thing. The same as Captain America, actually. Captain America and Superman, their morals are very, very similar, that they choose to do the right thing. Batman, he's...
Well, as in that they choose to be, to turn their back on personal lives. Because, I mean, there's umpteen sections in, you know, in Superman, when he's Superman, and when he puts his superpowers away in order to fall in love, whether it's Laurie Lamoris or whatever it is.
The mankind as a whole means more than his own personal life.
Yes.
And Batman is defined by the fact that he does not kill people. He could make this a whole lot simpler if he was just going around killing villains. And yes, he wrestles with that dark side where he clearly feels it, but he chooses, that's his one rule, not to do that. And I think that Captain Marvel, from the very, very beginning, if you were going to put her story in chronological order, she chooses to go on this flight simulation, even though she knows it's dangerous. And then when she sees that Mar-Vell is somebody else who she trusted completely, who wants to stop a war, and that's constantly all that she wants to do, and she sees that somebody's threatening the idea of amplifying this war, she chooses to destroy it and creates her superpowers accidentally. But what she thinks is going to happen is it's going to kill her, but she's going to stop this evil person from continuing this war. She's already a hero.
Yes.
And you're finding out that the choices that she makes along the way are that she always gets back up, and that she always will continue to try and do the right thing, regardless of how it affects her. And I think that that's what makes her interesting.
Okay, but as of the end of the film, she can fly and breathe in space and turn...
And this is what I mean, is that I think the third act of the movie is the least interesting part, because it goes into standard Marvel stuff, and I'm not feeling that heroic... Oh, she can finally do all this. Like, she's taken the thing off her neck, which reminded me of Scott Pilgrim. And that was my least favorite part of Scott Pilgrim as well. Like, you're being controlled by this thing. It just feels a bit hokey. But I want that. To me, I don't know. Like,
my favorite part of Scott Pilgrim was, you were a vegan and now you will be gone. Which I still think
vegan. Is genius. everybody has a different thing to point back to, but when I was a kid, when I saw Hook for the first time, The moment
I never expected you to go there.
Right, but
okay,
like
you've literally.
Here we go. Like,
you've militarized this.
Here we go. Because I know that Hook is very divisive, but when
this
I was
very shit, yeah, is what it is.
I know. Like objectively, it's properly crap. Mm-hmm. But when I was a kid, I loved Peter Pan, and it's a very well made, performed movie because it's Spielberg. It's just a bit rubbish. It's but the moment where he learns to be Peter Pan again. And he like flies into the sky, and everyone's looking at him. And the John Williams's, you know, score is like soaring. I get goosebumps and the hair stand up, and I want that moment for Captain Marvel. And for me, it just doesn't happen. Yeah, okay. And that's my problem, is that they don't celebrate how heroic it is at the end. It just shows you some flashy images that I feel like there's no heart behind. Okay. And I think that's what you're complaining about.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So look, to bring this sort of to a conclusion, but two things. Firstly, on the subject of Hook, I interviewed Spielberg once, and he said
hates it, doesn't he?
What he said was, which I thought was lovely, I said, you know, if you had to watch one of your films again, what would it be? He said, you know, I'd like to watch Hook again because I'd like to see if there is anything in it that I like, which I thought was a very interesting.
I think there's a lot to like in Hook somewhere, but as a whole, it's weird.
Skateboarding kids. That was the way it was.
But it was 1991.
Hey, I'm sorry. I'm just sorry. It's like I almost have a rule now, which is you put a skateboard in a movie and you can get out of
it. It was when The Amazing Spider-Man did Peter Parker with a skateboard. I was like, what year do you think it is?
The shorthand involved in filmmaking. We should do a thing on skateboarding in movies, and every
and
time you
want to
smack
there.
The filmmaker and go, stop it. Okay. So, but I think I agree with a lot of what you've said, and that does answer some of my reservations. I think, however, that your feeling about the end and my feeling about the end, actually, we are in agreement on, is that I don't know where you go from there, and I think that that's worrying in terms of, you know, you've now got the nuclear option.
Yeah,
you've now got the, you know. So Avengers Endgame will consist of, hello, I've got a problem, everyone's died. All right, no, you can just turn that back, fine, bye.
Yeah. So I hope that Avengers Endgame presents us with something different to do with
they'll
her.
They'll have to pull out a reason for her not to do it.
Yes.
Because she can do it, so they'll have
they
to
need
pull
to give
out
her a moral challenge.
Yeah, exactly.
Because she can literally do anything.
She can literally do anything.
So they need to give her something that's a choice for her, whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah. Because her superpower is that she's God.
Yeah. Although, but the thing is, her superpower is...
Brie Larson as God is quite a nice move. You
know? I mean, I like it.
Yeah, it's fine. Morgan Freeman up until now, so that's fine. You know?
But I think a lot of your complaints are fair, but are more aimed at the cinematic universe as a whole rather than this individual movie.
Okay, which surprises me because I don't think of myself as a cinematic universe kind of
person. But you clearly know the rules, and you clearly go, well, you've got this now, why didn't you call her earlier?
I've been hanging out with you too much, that's what that's done. All right, Jack, thank you very much. I'm going to go and see it again.
I saw it again last night and I liked it. I liked the third act less, I was really reinforced that I was properly engaged for the first two acts.
And I think we should end by saying we both like it.
Yeah.
We both think it's, you know, fundamentally good, and we're both glad that it's done as well as it has. And to all those nerdy, scrotal little fanboys, get a life, you sad, sad sacks of, you know, septic humanity.
What he said.
Thanks for downloading this Kermit on Film podcast. Jack will be back in a couple of weeks' time. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please do subscribe. Thank you, and keep watching the skies.